Great to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Coming up in our second hour, we're going to have a fun segment where we talk about recreating classics at long-gone restaurants, whether it's a baked good, an entree that you've tried to resurrect in the home kitchen, guessing as to the proper proportions in the recipe. We'll talk about that coming up next hour. But right now, we talk about the concept of normal. Jonathan Mooney's new book is Normal Sucks, How to Live, Learn, and Thrive Outside the Lines. This along the lines of the conversation we had about neurodiversity last week on Air Talk. Jonathan, good to have you with us today. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. Big fan.
Well, I appreciate it. Growing up, you write in this book about your experience as a kid who was diagnosed with certain learning disabilities. How did it affect you and your parents to get that diagnosis?
Well, I mean, before the diagnosis, I had the very subtle labels of being the stupid, crazy, lazy kid. And I spent a lot of the day chilling out with the janitor in the hallway, grew up on a first-name basis with Shirley, the receptionist in the principal's office. Spent a lot of the day hiding in the bathroom to escape reading out loud with tears streaming down my face. So the diagnosis was a story of one step forward, one step back. It was a step forward because it's better to be dyslexic or ADD than it is to be the stupid, crazy, lazy kid.
Well, and you have some sense of understanding what's going on neurologically.
You have some sense of understanding, and you have some sense of destigmatization, right? It's not a moralization of a kid. But it's one step backwards because inherent in those diagnoses is the notion of deficit, disorder, a pathologizing of a kid. I remember when I got the test results and me and my mom went into the school psychologist's office. And the moment we walked into that office, it was obvious everyone thought we were getting terrible news. You know, the lights were down low. There was jazz music playing in the background. There was a box of tissues on the table. You know, it was like we were there to mourn the death of my normality. So it's better to be dyslexic than stupid, that's for sure.
Or lazy. Which has a moral judgment.
Moral judgment to it. But ultimately, I was made to feel that my differences were deficiencies. And that's what took me a long time to heal from.
What would have been a better approach? We could think of the value of you learning that information about yourself. What would have been messaging about that which would have helped you feel good about yourself, but understanding the challenges that that diagnosis realistically brings?
Yeah, you know, fast forward a couple years from that scene in the school psychologist's office, and we do have the better approach. It's a teacher I had grown up named Mr. R. I grew up here in the South Bay in Manhattan Beach. And I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for this man. And he was a man that had a relentless commitment to the idea that everyone had something right with him. And he pulled my mom and I aside one day and said, "Hey, congratulations, Jonathan's dyslexic." What a different scene than the tissues on the table. And he went off to talk about all of the strengths and talents that come with having a diverse learning style, not despite the challenges, but because of them. And that's an opportunity that every psychologist, every teacher has. You know, the story of neurodiversity is a complex story. It's a story of a very specific neurobiologically based challenges, which are real, but it's also a story of very specific neurobiologically based strengths and gifts that go hand in hand. So what I advocate for, what would have been better in my life, is let's tell the whole story. Let's talk about the challenges. Let's talk about the strengths, gifts, and talents as well.
We're talking with Jonathan Mooney, author of Normal Sucks, How to Live, Learn, and Thrive Outside the Lines. If you're a fan of his writing, his previous books, or the new one, we welcome you joining us at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. I think this applies even beyond something that's neurologically or educationally diagnosable, because all of our kids and we ourselves have certain aspects about us that are challenges, that are things where we don't feel that we fit in, where we lag behind others, that, you know, are difficult for us, and other things where we might have some sort of an advantage compared to others in the world. That's sort of, you know, that's sort of the typical thing. And so part of our jobs, I would argue, as parents or working in education, whatever, is to help the young people that we work with or in our families to see this more, you know, sort of as a holistic thing. And that much of life and being a successful person, whatever that means, is sort of managing yourself and dealing with all the, you know, with the different challenges and strengths that we have, and just seeing ourselves as straightforwardly as we can.
Much of life is extricating ourselves from the imperative to be normal, regardless of who we are. You know, a philosopher I admire named Michel Foucault wrote that we live in the normalizing society and the judges of normality are ever present everywhere. And it is a concept that looms over all of us. It looms over those of us who were called not normal because of specific learning, attentional, atypical brains or bodies. But it looms over even those of us who think we are normal or try to capitulate to the idea of normal. The reality is the only normal people are people you don't know very well. The moment you get to know another human being, it's their eccentricities, their fallibility, their strengths, their talents, their disabilities, their abilities that constitute their humanity. So it's a more authentic, it's a more human way to live, to embrace that reality of difference.
The challenge is, of course, that, and let's take ADHD for an example, is that so many jobs as schools today reward the ability to attend over a given period of time. So how do you, in a world that's largely structured for people who can focus for an extended period, and schools reward that, and the workplace generally, not exclusively, but generally reward, then how do you deal with that wiring?
Well, you know, first, I think at the highest level, we should be challenging school environments and work environments that are only built for certain types of minds and brains. You know, we just had a vibrant conversation around the issue of diversity in your previous segment in a different context. But what we're talking about here, what I'm talking about and advocating for, is the idea of reframing states of being that have historically been pathologized, seen through the lens of sickness, deficit, and disorder, as manifestations of human diversity. And just like we have a moral and ethical imperative to build school environments that don't just work for some kids, but work for all kids when it comes to the issue of race, class, gender, socioeconomic status, we also have a moral imperative to build school environments and work environments that embrace those cognitive differences and celebrates them as well.
This reminds me, and I've shared this on the air before, when I was in sixth grade in elementary school in Inglewood, I was in an experimental classroom where the teacher didn't do the conventional get up in front of the class and teach. And everything was set up around stations in the classroom, and you could decide what you wanted to study at a given point. And then there was self-assessment. You could help other students who were – and the teacher's available for you to come. So the students who had a difficult time focusing on one thing for an extended period could work a little bit on math. Then they could work on history. Then they could work, and the teachers available to help them where they got stuck. So they didn't have to keep up with sort of, here's the state of the classroom and you've got to be like everybody else. But it enabled a kind of individualization of education. And it just doesn't, I'm not aware of a lot of experimentation like that these days.
Well, it's a perfect example of how environments, the environments we set up, work, home, school, can enable or disable. But too often we call the person who doesn't fit the environment the problem. But the reality is that in my life, ADD wasn't the problem. You know, the school desk was the problem. The idea that you had to sit still all day long as a way to learn, that was the problem. And ultimately, the social shame or stigma of not being able to fit, that really was the problem. You know, people don't have disability. They experience disability in environments that don't embrace difference.
We'll continue with Jonathan Mooney, his new book, Normal Sucks, How to Live, Learn, and Thrive Outside the Line. We're at 866-893-KPCC. We'll be back in 1 minute. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Larry Mantle with Jonathan Mooney. He's an author, public speaker, and speaking of which, he'll be talking about his book, Normal Sucks, at the Friendship Foundation tonight in Redondo Beach. The South Bay is his home region. The event starts at 7 o'clock tonight, and we have information you can link to our AirTalk page at kpecc.org. If you're someone who is not what we call typical, you're someone who's different in some way, and that's presented a challenge. What helped you be able to work around that? Or, was it Mr. R, your teacher, who did that for you when you were in school, Jonathan? 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Angela writes on the page, "I've never fit in. What I've learned in my adulthood is to be completely comfortable in my own skin. And much to my surprise, people are drawn to that. The teenage me, who suffered greatly because I could not and would not conform, never saw this love of self coming." Angela, thanks so much for sharing that. JSK writes, "Poor memory required me to process and create a cognitive map of understanding something to be able to recall it, though in an altered form." And I was just sharing with you during the break about a family member who has dyslexia, who runs his own mortgage company, dealing with numbers all day long. Because he was so smart, he was able to find his own workarounds to be able to be dyslexic and be able to do that kind of work. So we're asking you, what if you're in that category, what have been your workarounds? Who was the person who inspired you? 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Jonathan, what kind of progress do you see in the ways that we're talking about people who are not neurotypical these days?
Well, I think your comments from your listeners are an example of that progress. The acceptance of self and also the recognition that there are value, strengths, and talents, not despite the difference, but because of it. That sounds like a subtle distinction, despite versus because, but it's not. You know, for most of human history, we have said that folks with atypical brains and bodies have problems that they overcome. They overcome their problems. And if they contribute to the world, it's despite their differences. But we are now in a moment where research, brain science, has shown us that there are strengths and talents that are intrinsically linked to these differences. We know more than ever that while people with dyslexia struggle with reading and writing, that there are gifts that come with that. I'm that way, you know. I read in the 12th percentile. I spell at a third grade level. When I went to college, I thought that the university offered a course in orgasmic chemistry, right?
That might be an interesting offer.
Well, imagine my disappointment on the first day of that class.
For that class, yeah.
But what goes hand in hand with the challenges of reading are creativity, entrepreneurship, and problem solving. So that is progress for us to recognize that in the scientific community and beyond.
Pete in Burbank, thank you for joining us. So what were you able to be able to leverage it with your learning disability?
I performed over 8,000 stand-up shows around the country, headlining the Hard Rocks and comedy clubs. And yeah, I struggled, 4 hours a day in an LD program. And then the second 4 hours a day, I would go to vocational electronics and fix TVs, and nobody ever seemed to notice that. But what I find interesting is I talk about the learning disability program in my show, which for the most part gets great laughs. And then once in a while, you'll get someone who's offended over making fun of yourself, which I find kind of ironic.
That is kind of ironic, because you would think people would see that sort of, recognition of aspects of themselves or people they know. And obviously you're doing stand up in front of crowds, so it's not like you're bemoaning you're a loser.
Well, I think, as we know, people don't get upset about what you say. They get upset about the story they make up about what you say, but they don't really understand that.
What did you have to at some point realize you had this ability, or did you have the confidence that you could be a performer even at a young age, even as you struggled in the classroom?
I think the reason I went into it was because I was desperately looking for some sort of validation, and I knew that I could make an impact with people with my humor, which is kind of interesting, because if you're always looking for validation, that doesn't serve you in the long run. And eventually I turned the validation into being a contribution. And that made a huge difference for me later down the road.
Pete, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. You mind sharing your last name? We'll look for you on stage.
Yeah, it's Pete George, and I go by the rock star of comedy because I use an electric guitar in half my show as well.
All right, sounds fun. Pete in Burbank joining us, 866-893-KPECC. Sparky in Santa Monica says, I have ADHD, and teachers didn't know what to do with me. I eventually got held back in high school, and I have to agree with Jonathan that normal sucks. 866-893-KPECC. Paul in North Hill says, I was diagnosed with as dyslexic when I was seven. At the time, the term was relatively unknown, and it affected my academics, led me to drop out when I was in high school. Jonathan, just real briefly, do you feel like there are some schools that are starting to figure this out, diversify the way that they educate kids who are different?
Yeah, there's Mr. R's all around the country. There's people who see the potential of the Pete's of the world. There's schools committed to a broader definition of diversity here in Los Angeles and beyond. And I'm inspired by that future and inspired by everyone who had the courage here to share their different and to challenge the idea that there's one way to be.
Jonathan Mooney, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Normal Sucks, How to Live, Learn, and Thrive Outside the Lines. Once again, it'll be in the South Bay tonight at 7 o'clock, Redondo Beach at the Friendship Foundation. We have a link on the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. We have a lot more to talk about in the second hour, and I'll tell you about it momentarily. It's Air Talk on 89.3.